This is a Triple J podcast.
Every billionaire is a douchebag.
Parliament is a sick place.
I thought, oh my God, I might be an alcoholic. Obviously, I'm an inadequate guest.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
Who's the Prime Minister?
Their deaths devastated families around the world and horrified young backpackers. Six tourists, including two 19-year-old Aussies, killed in a mass methanol poisoning after drinking contaminated alcohol. Well, 19 months on, authorities in Laos now say they're not going to be laying charges over the Aussies' deaths because they say they don't have enough evidence. So how do their families feel? G'day, it's Dave Marchese with you for Hack. Coming up, we're going to speak to the dad of one of the Australians who died, Bianca Jones.
You can never prepare for someone telling you that your daughter's life and the life of five other individuals is worth less than a year, potentially, in jail.
Yeah, that really powerful chat with Mark Jones coming up very soon. We're also going to hear about why some at-home STI tests have been pulled from Australian shelves. We'll fill you in there. First, though.
Hack. And just like that, the UK has its seventh Prime Minister in just 10 years.
On Triple J.
Yeah, did you hear the UK's got a new Prime Minister? As expected, Andy Burnham's taken over, replacing Sir Keir Starmer. And some say Andy is Labour's only hope, promising a fresh new approach. But will Britain's seventh leader in 10 years have what it takes to turn things around? And how is he different? Alice Angeloni's been looking into it.
I just woke up to find out we have a new Prime Minister.
Not another one?
In the last 24 hours, the UK has locked in a new Prime Minister.
The North loves him. The South kind of just knows him as the Mayor of Manchester.
Last month, Andy Burnham was Mayor of Greater Manchester. Now he's in charge of the fifth largest economy in the world.
I have just come from Buckingham Palace, where I have accepted His Majesty the King's invitation to form a government.
Andy Burnham spoke on the steps of 10 Downing Street last night our time.
We will make this moment a circuit breaker for Britain, bringing forward the biggest changes in the last 40 years.
Speaking without a lectern and with no notes, he's breaking British tradition from the outset.
Let us make this the moment when Britain starts to believe again, the moment we bring back hope.
But he was quick to acknowledge that the past few years haven't been easy.
I am acutely conscious that I am the sixth person in the last 10 years to walk up this street.
The UK's had so many prime ministers lately that even the Downing Street sound engineer has become famous. The internet's dubbed him Hot Podium Guy from resignation speeches.
So every time that a UK prime minister has resigned or made a big announcement, Hot Podium Guy has been there.
I now pass the baton to Andy Burnham.
He replaces Sir Keir Starmer after his popularity among the public and his own party plummeted. Sir Keir officially stood down yesterday too.
I wish him every success.
But taking the role unopposed, Andy Burnham hasn't had to win an election or even a leadership contest.
What do you know about Andy Burnham? What do you make of him?
Seems okay. He's a people person, more on the side of the working class.
He says what he's going to do when he does it.
If he does what he's just said he's going to do, taking all the homeless off the streets, then let's hope he does.
So what does Andy Burnham stand for?
His first pledges are to tackle the cost of living crisis.
Well, he's promising immediate cost of living relief and says he'll do politics differently. Tim Bale, who's a professor of politics at the University of London, says he can spin a narrative.
The fact that Andy Burnham does seem to be able to connect with ordinary people, the fact that he is able to project a sense of hope and purpose and direction, I think will help the government. Will it be a magic bullet? No.
The details around his policies are yet to be released. David Aikman, an economist with the National Institute of Economic and Social Research, says issues the UK is facing, like high levels of public debt, won't change overnight.
The underlying economic problems of the country are mainly structural, I would say. So a change of leadership isn't going to, by itself, address those problems.
So what does this mean for us and the rest of the world?
Foreign leaders have been quick to congratulate him, including Australia's Anthony Albanese.
Andy Burnham had been Prime Minister for less than an hour when he first spoke to Donald Trump.
Yeah, so he was super quick to get on a call with Donald Trump, as the BBC explains.
Andy Burnham did underline his commitment to defence and security, which will have pleased Mr. Trump. He wants the UK to spend much more on defence.
Andy Burnham says he'll honour defence commitments to international partners, which is a pretty clear sign he doesn't plan on tinkering with the AUKUS submarine pact.
Hack on Triple J.
Ali Angeloni reporting there. We've got some messages coming through on this. Someone says, Mayor to PM, crazy promotion. It is a big step up, isn't it? Another person saying, love to hear a Prime Minister that doesn't have that vile, posh accent the rest of them have. And someone else says, who really cares about this dude? The UK is a failed state. We need to cut our ties and move on. Big comments on the text line this afternoon. We will keep you updated if there are other massive developments out of the UK, but we're going to move on now.
This is Hack.
Definitely people are aware of it very much, especially cocktails and free pouring drinks.
On Triple J.
A few years ago, Holly Morton Bowles and Bianca Jones were on what was supposed to be the trip of a lifetime, doing what so many Australians do, travelling through Southeast Asia, making memories, enjoying being out of school. Instead, they were tragically part of a mass methanol poisoning event at a backpackers' hostel that they were staying at. Their families have been trying to come to terms with their deaths ever since and have been keeping a close eye on investigations. Last week, there was an update, and in a moment, we're going to chat to Bianca's dad, Mark Jones, to hear how he and his family are feeling about all of this. But first, Ariana Lodchente with this update.
On Friday, the families of victims who died from suspected methanol poisoning in Laos finally got some clarity, but it was not what they'd expected.
Authorities in Laos have charged the owner of a distillery over the mass methanol poisoning which killed Australian teenagers Bianca Jones and Holly Morton Bowles in 2024.
The families of the victims were shocked to learn the potential penalties for the distillery could be a $1,600 fine and a short jail sentence.
There's been outrage from the girls' parents who say they're astonished at the value Laos had put on the lives of tourists.
There's outrage from the Australian government too. Mark Butler is the health minister.
We expect transparency. More importantly, we expect accountability. This latest news will be devastating for Holly and Bianca's parents and family and friends. I think devastating for the broader Australian community. Our hearts are breaking for them all over again.
So, what's happened? Back in November 2024, two 19-year-old Aussies, Bianca Jones and Holly Morton Bowles, were overseas on holiday, staying at the Nana Backpackers Hostel in Vang Vieng in Laos. They died, along with four other tourists, after drinking cocktails that contained methanol.
This is every parent's very worst fear and a nightmare that no one should have to endure.
Last Friday, Lao officials gave one of their first detailed accounts of the investigation into the six deaths and the charges.
The Australian government's been briefed on these possible charges. One of them is operating a business illegally, and the other is production or sale of consumer goods that are dangerous, essentially hazardous to health.
A distillery owner was charged with running an illegal business and selling dangerous consumer goods. But Lao officials say they don't have enough evidence to lay charges over the deaths of the Australian victims, because autopsies weren't done. The penalties for the distillery could range from a maximum of 1 year to 4 years prison. Australian Foreign Minister Penny Wong released a statement saying she's, quote, deeply frustrated and bitterly disappointed that authorities in Laos are not pursuing the most serious charges. She says she'll speak to the Lao Foreign Minister when she's in Manila in the Philippines for ASEAN meetings this week. And so far, the Lao ambassador was called into a meeting in Canberra on Friday. Plus, a special envoy, Pablo Kang, has been appointed to engage with Lao authorities. The government has now raised the travel advice level for Laos because of crime, risk of methanol poisoning, and ongoing concerns around lack of transparency in the justice system. Plus, warnings against consuming Tiger-branded spirits, the drink that it's believed Bianca and Holly drank before they died. Here's Graham Turner, Flight Centre's Managing Director.
There are a lot of people going to not go to Laos because of this, and you can't blame them, can you?
Hack on Triple J.
Ariana Lucente reporting there. Look, with us now is Mark Jones, who is the father of Bianca Jones, one of the Melbourne teenagers who died in 2024. Mark, thank you so much for joining us on Hack. I really appreciate your time.
Pleasure.
Before we get into some of this latest news of what we've heard from authorities in Laos, I wanted to ask you, can you tell us a bit about Bianca and Holly, like what kind of people they were?
They were both beautiful young ladies who were incredibly loving and caring for their families, for their friends. Neither of them tolerated fools. They were both going to make change in this world for the positive. They stuck up for what they believed in. Yeah, they were just beautiful young human beings.
It sounds as well like they were really excited about this trip. Do you remember, you know, talking much to them about the trip and how they were feeling about it?
Yeah, they were super excited. It was a trip of a lifetime for both of them. Had been talking about this for a long time. Holly left a number of weeks before Bianca. Bianca had to finish some exams, and then Bianca met Holly over in Laos. But, you know, they were just incredibly excited to be connected again.
It's been a year and a half now, longer. I mean, how are you feeling about this news out of Laos that detectives there are saying there isn't enough evidence to lay charges over the deaths of Bianca and Holly? How has that made you feel?
Incredibly disappointed, incredibly frustrated. The Australian government, to their credit, has from very early stages offered the Laotian government access to federal police to support any investigation, to support any evidence collection that wasn't taken up. So the fact there is no evidence or seems to be limited evidence is incredibly frustrating. It does seem that someone somewhere seems to be covering or has covered something up. So we're not sure if that has taken place. There was obviously evidence in and around Nana's backpackers and likely other backpackers where the girls and, you know, it wasn't just our two girls, it was two beautiful Danish girls. There was Simone, the British lass, and an American gentleman who all passed away. There would have been evidence when six people pass away in quick succession. In certainly here, there would be prompt investigation and evidence sought and secured. That seems not to have happened over there.
Were you expecting this news? Is it something that you'd prepared for at all?
You can never prepare for someone telling you that your daughter's life and the life of five other individuals is worth less than a year, potentially, in jail, which was the maximum sentence, and $1,600. So whilst there will never be any form of penalty that is ever going to bring Bianca back, any reasonableness would not think that a maximum sentence of a year in jail and $1,600 would serve as justice for the death of my daughter and five others.
Mark, what's the communication been like with Laotian authorities throughout this process? Have you heard much from them?
Zero.
Nothing at all?
No. No, we haven't. We've heard all the information we've been getting has been through the Australian government, and to their credit. Certainly this year they've been very good in keeping us updated. Get some information through the Danish family, so we ourselves, the Joneses and the Bowleses, connect reasonably regularly with the two Danish families, and Simone's family in the UK share information.
So the Australian authorities are saying they're deeply frustrated, bitterly disappointed by this. You're saying you've found the response from them okay over the past little while?
This year we've had direct contact with DFAT, the special envoy, Pablo Kang. We're very appreciative. The government has put in a special envoy, very appreciative of the stance that the government has taken, particularly this most recent news, and appreciative of the fact that the government is disappointed, because we're incredibly disappointed.
Are you hopeful that some of this diplomatic pressure might change something?
Hopeful, yes. Do I believe it will change anything? No, but I am hopeful. And again, I think the Australian government is doing what they can within the bounds of political diplomacy to do what they can, but I don't generally believe there will be much change to the Laotian government's stance.
This is Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. I'm speaking with Mark Jones, who is the father of Bianca Jones, one of the two Australians killed in Laos in 2024 after drinking contaminated alcohol. Mark, how has the past 18 months been for you and your family? I mean, I imagine it's been really hard. You're trying to come to terms with everything that's happened, and then you've also been out there in the media and trying to keep this story in the headlines. What's that been like?
It's been hard. It's tiring. We miss our girls. We miss them a lot. My wife will go in and open Bianca's blinds every day. I'll go in and close them when I go to bed, and just say say goodnight to her. Yeah, it's tough.
You have to apologise, Mark. You don't have to apologise at all. As you said, it wasn't just Holly and Bianca who died. There were other young people from around the world. You mentioned that you are speaking with some of them. How are they going?
Yeah, look, I'll speak on behalf of the five families. We've had less, in fact, we've had no contact with the American gentleman's family, but we've had constant contact with the two Danish families and British family. Everyone's in a very similar boat. It's very difficult. I think most people could probably appreciate you lose a daughter. It is very tough, but we're getting by as best we can.
As we've heard, the travel advice for Australian travellers to Laos is to exercise a high degree of caution. And in the travel advice, it mentions the risk of methanol poisoning. I wonder, Mark, like, do you have any advice for young Aussies who might be listening now and are thinking that they want to go over and do some backpacking?
Yeah, look, I backpacked when I was younger, and when Bianca wanted to go, I encouraged her to go, and I would encourage Australians to go. But I temper that with caution. Do go, do have fun, but be careful. My advice around drinking is, if you want to drink spirits when you go through duty-free, buy your bottle of spirits here. You know it's not going to be tainted. When you are in these second and third world countries, you're best off sticking to beer. If you are drinking spirits, make sure you see the bartender crack the bottle. Just be very, very, very cautious, and you're better off buying the spirits yourself and making sure it is a label and a brand you know. And even then, those brands can be counterfeit, so just be very careful when buying or consuming certainly spirit alcohol in second and third world countries, because it's not just Laos where this issue is. There has been multiple second and third world countries where they have had deaths through consumption of methanol.
Have you heard from people who've like come and spoken to you about their own experiences and saying, yeah, I got really sick?
Yeah, I've had a few people reach out to us through the past 18 months. And yeah, I think as a parent, you want to keep your children safe, but equally children and young adults need to go and experience the world.
Just finally, Mark, I mean, you said before that Bianca and Holly were people who stood up for the right thing. How do you think Bianca would feel seeing you fight so hard on this?
I think she'd be proud. If the shoe was on the other foot, she'd be doing it. Again, both Holly and Bianca were vocal in sticking up for what is right. I believe this is right, as hard as it is to continue to speak to the media, but we want to make sure that, as we said right from the very start, when certainly Bianca passed, her passing was not going to be for nothing. So the ability for hopefully this to educate people so this doesn't happen to others is what I'll continue to do. And in answer to your question, I think Bianca would be incredibly proud.
I'm sure she would be, and I'm sure you've educated so many people this afternoon who are going to be thinking twice about maybe some of their actions and plans. Mark Jones, it's a massive thing what you're doing, speaking so publicly, but I really appreciate you coming on.
Thanks, Dave. Appreciate the time.
And some messages coming through. Someone says, I'm a grown man tearing up at this. What an unbelievably tough bloke getting on and speaking. Another person saying the fact they are not trying to find a way to charge them after the loss of multiple lives is unbelievable. And someone else just saying, Mark, I hope you and your family get the justice you deserve. Okay, we're going to move on.
Hack.
I have received a very sexy package in the post in the form of an at-home STI testing kit.
On Triple J.
I don't know if you've ever tried an at-home STI test kit. They're pretty new on the market. But in a bit of a wild story out today, some are saying that those testing kits might not be as reliable as we think we are. Let's check in on this with Achal Arok, who's a reporter at The Guardian who broke this story today. Achal, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
Can you take us through what you found out here?
Yeah, so I was actually alerted to this story through a random Reddit post that had basically questioned where at-home chlamydia and gonorrhea tests had gone. You know, they couldn't find it in pharmacy. So that led me into this little spiral. And I reached out to the TGA where I put these questions to them. And they basically told me that they had issued a six-month ban to a company called Touch Biotechnology and had issued an order for them to remove their chlamydia and gonorrhea test because of false negative tests that some of its users were basically receiving while doing these tests at home.
Do we have any idea how many people could potentially be impacted by this?
At the moment, no. So the TGA says that it doesn't have a reliable estimate of how many people were impacted or how many people had taken the test and had received false negatives. But behind the scenes, they were alerted by a health service that had seen patients coming through there. But at the moment, we are unsure.
Can you give us a bit of background information on these tests? Like, have they been available for long? And do we know how popular they've been?
So we know that the TGA had approved this particular kit from Touch Biotechnology 2 years ago. So at the end of 2024, this product was approved and given the all good to go on shelves in pharmacies. And over the past 2 years, you know, this company was supposed to be producing these post-market surveillance reports, which interestingly, the company has basically declined to share with us. So we don't have an understanding or an idea of how broadly used this product was at the moment.
Has the company said anything else to you, Achal? Like, have you reached out to them? Have they provided you with any kind of comment?
Yeah, so I reached out to the company and basically put a list of questions to them, and a lot of my requests for information was actually denied. So one of the things that I asked them was any findings of post-market surveillance reports that they were required to submit to the TGA. They declined to share that with us. I also asked them for any evidence of the kind of submissions they had to give the TGA in terms of proving that their claim of how well this product performed, that was something that they also denied to share with us. But interestingly, they said that they accept the TGA's decision and have taken all these products off shelves and are abiding by the kind of order.
Had there been any kind of concerns or issues raised by health experts leading up to this?
Yeah, so 2 years ago when this story had been announced, as in the TGA had announced that it had approved this product, and for context, this is Australia's first and only product of its kind. So when it comes to testing chlamydia and gonorrhea at home, there were concerns, and among one of the concerned voices was medical director Dr. Sarah Whitburn from Sexual Health Victoria. And 2 years ago, she had urged caution around the approval of the product. And one of the things she had cautioned was around the limitations of the kit. So for this particular product, it's a vaginal swab, but we know that STIs can be contracted orally. So that was one of the limitations that she brought up. And another concern that Dr. Whitburn raised was the testing that went into ensuring that this product was suitable for wider use. You know, she had flagged that at the time, it was tested on a small sample of people, and she had kind of raised questions about whether that was enough for the TGA to allow it to be distributed so broadly.
There might be some people now who maybe have a test at home or, and they're not sure what to do. Is there any advice for those people?
Yeah, absolutely. So at the moment, the advice stands that if anyone has used this product, that they should seek further health advice or health care, and that looks like going to your local clinic and getting tested again, you know, because STIs like gonorrhea and chlamydia can have really serious health implications for sexually active people and their partners.
Thank you so much for the update. I mean, that is something that a lot of people might have not been familiar with or even really across. So appreciate your reporting on this. Achal Arok from The Guardian, thanks for coming on Hack.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hack.
I'm such a proud Aussie. Yeah, I drive a Commodore. I've got a mobile.
On Triple J. The Commonwealth Games kick off this week, so we're thinking a lot about elite athletes. But reaching that level of sport, competing for your country, takes a lot of money. And maybe you don't know this, but 40% of Aussie athletes live below the poverty line. Jackson Worthington's been speaking to some Olympic hopefuls about what life as an elite athlete is like.
At 21, Steffi Fayesh is already one of Australia's best beach volleyballers. She's on track to make her first Olympics in 2028, but financially, she's barely scraping by. She's living off uni grants to fund her dream.
Right now, playing beach volleyball is not something that could finance me for my life. So living off prize money is not an efficient way or really a sustainable way to have a living at all.
Steffi's entire life is volleyball. She spends most of the year overseas competing, and when she's here in Australia, her day starts with training and ends with recovery.
Where I live is kind of like a storage unit, to be honest. Like, it's got all my clothes. I know that it's a safe space for me to just like dump stuff. Then I sleep here and then I go out for the day. I do my training and then I come back and I eat.
About 45% of Aussie athletes are living below the poverty line, according to 2023 research from the Australian Sports Fund. Two-thirds of athletes between the ages of 18 and 34 have considered leaving their sports, and the average income for full-time athletes is between $23,000 and $49,000 a year. Young athletes often have to pay just to play their sport. They pay for equipment, travel to events, physio, rehab, and pretty much anything else associated with competing. Steffi is part of Australia's national volleyball setup, so her uniforms and equipment are provided. She also has access to rehab and training facilities through the Queensland Academy of Sport.
I don't want people to feel pity for us or anything like that. We're the ones chasing this dream.
But her training and uni schedule doesn't leave any time for work.
Sometimes the days just get really, really long, and it's really draining to train. Like, training is 100% mental and physical focus, so around that, there's not much time for other things.
In a year and a half, right before the LA Olympics, Steffi will finish up at uni. She's worried about what that will mean for her financially.
I spend a lot of time paying for rent at home, but I'm not actually living in it. Then when I'm overseas, I'm also spending money like transport and food and accommodation and everything like that. So like, the amount is basically double.
She reckons most people underestimate just how much pressure young athletes are under.
In the Olympics, you just see like the glory moment.
Small prize pools and limited funding are seeing athletes like Steffi turn to corporate sponsors or fundraising to chase their dreams.
You have to be really proactive and you have to be really persistent.
A few years ago, five-time Olympian Nat Cook set up the Aussie Athlete Fund to try and help young athletes connect with the business sector. The not-for-profit provides funding, helps teach athletes how to raise their own money, and provides mentoring to support young athletes. Steffi's been working with the fund. She reckons they've helped her understand the importance of getting out of your circle and asking for help.
It's not a comfortable thing to ask for money. It's not a comfortable thing to say, hey, look, like I'm actually really struggling here and I need your help.
Yeah, self-funding, it's huge. It's a big barrier into high-performance sport, especially as a para-athlete as well.
Tom Walvin's a para-cyclist. He rides a hand bike and competes in road and endurance events.
Each piece of equipment, depending on the sport that you do, is usually custom to your body and to your impairment to kind of suit you personally.
He's been working with the Aussie Athlete Fund for a little while to make sure he can continue to compete.
I'm unable to do my job as a paramedic anymore, so this is what I do full time. So I really, really rely on corporate sponsorship.
In 6 years, Australia's going to host the Olympics in Brisbane. Tom hopes he'll be there.
I'm such a proud Aussie. Yeah, I drive a Commodore. I've got a mobile. It would just mean the world to me as well. A home games in Brisbane is absolutely huge.
Steffi does too, but neither of them will be if they can't afford to compete.
Any home event is like indescribable. Last year, I got to experience a home world championship. My family and my friends got to come see. Seeing them all together was like oh my God, is this actually happening? It felt like a little bit of a teaser towards like, what could it be like to be playing in front of a home crowd in the Olympics in 2032?
Hack on Triple J.
Jackson Worthington reporting then. Yeah, I'm sure we're going to be hearing heaps more about athletes, how they're going in the lead up to the Olympics, because it's a tricky time, especially this time, and all the training is underway. That is all we've got time for on Hack for now.